you had like 14 pairs of heels in your bag. I was like, Christine, you do not need 14 pairs of heels to go to Southeast Asia. I promise you, you'll never use it. And you're like, but what about one pair at least, please, please. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Kirsty Pike.
And I'm Christine Diaz, and we are your hosts for the original podcast, She Comes With Baggage.
So most of you might know us from our platform On Airplane Mode across Instagram and TikTok, and today we're going to be talking all about how that platform got started.
Can't wait.
All right, welcome back. So now we are on to episode 4, where we are going to be talking to you all about On Airplane Mode and how we got started with our platform. Where we left off last was our love story. And
this is my favorite topic, so I'm so happy we're here. I honestly wanted to start with this, and I feel like we were kind of combating of, like, do we start with our love story first, or do we start with On Airplane Mode?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the catalyst of everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I also think, you know, this is such a piece of our love story anyways, but I think we needed to go in order and build the anticipation of it. So now we're here, and this we can get into it.
Where we left off, we said we're going to travel, and of course, what in my mind was a month, you already planned in your mind for a few months, because you were like, we're going to Southeast Asia, this is like your bread and butter, you've been there a ton of times, right? If we reach 20K, we are here, we are ready to go, and now it's like the big moves that are happening, because I thought that was the hardest step, but actually the hardest step was, one, me leaving my job.
Yeah.
Like
your corporate 9 to 5.
My corporate 9 to 5, letting them know that I'm quitting.
Yeah.
Which was honestly huge.
How'd you feel about that process, leaving your corporate job?
It was definitely scary. I went to school. I'm a first generation American. So my parents were, they thought I was crazy, honestly. They were just like, what are you doing? Why are you ruining your life? But I mean, I think it's important that everyone travels long-term.
Yeah. I also think it's not, in other countries, it's very common for people to take sabbaticals and go and travel for an extended period of time, whether that is a summer or a year long. They go and travel and they see the world. They get accustomed to different cultures and religions and lifestyles. And so it really provides a lot of, you know, experience for people. But I think for America and Americans, it's not that common.
It's not common at all.
Especially 6.5 years ago. I feel like at that point in time, people barely even had passports. I think like 40% of Americans had passports at that time. So to tell people that you're going to quit your job, quit the American dream, as people would call it, and we're going to go travel, it was just something people didn't hear about.
In the back of my mind, I wanted it to happen. I was already kind of making those connections that I needed to so that when we would come back, because again, this is a little bit before On Airplane Mode. This is before we even thought a travel platform. We wanted a travel platform.
Yeah.
This was more so literally to travel, like to go, to not worry about everything. Your lease was up. Yeah. Like we sold everything. We literally took one backpack.
Yeah. We took one. I mean,
each.
I said this before that you were trying. I'll never forget. We were sitting on the floor of your house and we were like trying to figure out what to pack for this who knows how long trip it's going to be. And you had like 14 pairs of heels in your bag. I was like, Christine, you do not need 14 pairs of heels to go to Southeast Asia. I promise you, you'll never use it. And you're like, but what about one pair at least? Please, please.
I know. Like, I begged for that one pair. I was like, I need to have one, right? Like, what if we go out? I don't know. At that time, we were going out clubbing. Like, we had a nightlife adrenaline in us. So we were always going out. So I was like, obviously, I need one pair of heels isn't going to hurt.
But, you know, you never used them. That's fine.
I never used them carry that once.
I was like, fine. Because whatever, the thing with backpacking too is whatever you take in that backpack, you are carrying on your back for however long you're traveling for, right? Like those heels are just extra weight. And I was like, all right, it's up to you. But we did it. We made it happen. So we booked a trip to Thailand. And I absolutely love Thailand. I had been there a couple times before you. We had traveled there throughout that 2 years of saving. And you fell in love with it, too. And I was like, this is where I think that you could start. We could start our trip together. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it, too, is Thailand's a great entry point for people traveling Southeast Asia because it is so culturally different than most people are used to when traveling. Mm-hmm. I've always said Thailand is a great place to start, yeah, and then go from there. And a lot of people backpack in Thailand and they go Vietnam, else, Cambodia, yeah, and do all the things. So we were just like, let's go for it. Let's do it. But I think we also are both so competitive that we wanted to do every country in Southeast Asia. So I think we picked Thailand first.
We picked Thailand first. I think it was April 9th was when we actually left
in 2019. The US
in, yeah, 2019. And then by the time we got to Thailand, because it takes like a day or two to get there, it was Songkran, which is Thailand's New Year's Day. And it's also the biggest water festival, like, in the world. Water gun festival, actually, yeah, in the world. And it was insane.
It's like 3 days long of people just completely dousing each other in water.
Yeah.
Right? And it's so fun. I mean,
like, everyone in the streets. Like, I think in Chiang Mai, they have, like, elephants even running around. Not running around. But you know what I mean? They're walking around and, like,
spraying people with water.
I hate this word. Squirting water, yeah, like, everywhere. Like, water is just going everywhere. Yeah. Like, there was a point where we were walking in Khao San Road, which is one of the main tourist roads in Bangkok, and we could not get down this road without getting wet.
Yeah. And I think every single person has either a water gun, a bucket of water. People are throwing things off the balcony, but it's all in good fun, right? Everyone's laughing and having a great time. So yeah, that was literally day two of us landing in Thailand was the start of this three-day-long festival. So we kicked off this long backpacking trip with, I think, at the highest of highs. Like, it was, yeah, amazing. And then we, the next country we chose, what, I think you picked it, right?
And yeah, I wanted to go off the beaten path. And so I knew eventually we would get to Vietnam and to Laos and Cambodia, mm-hmm, and like the more typical places that you would, or countries that you would travel to when you're doing Southeast Asia. But we actually went left and we went to Myanmar, mm-hmm, which was untouched. I think they just opened up tourism, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
At that time,
it was like 10 years of tourism for the country.
So, like, there have been people in this country that have literally never seen a foreign person in, yeah, their lives.
Yeah. And that was definitely the most, I think, untouched country that we've ever been to, and still to this day for me. I think we were some of the only backpackers. There was only one hostel in most of the main destinations.
Mm-hmm. Which was beautiful, actually.
Yeah. There's something about it that was so beautiful because so many people had never traveled there before. And so when you are staying at this one hostel with people, you're making these connections and traveling with certain people that, you know, most people in their lifetime are never going to have this experience. And we were going on this trip, and I think also this is a weekend maybe at this point, right? Mm-hmm. We're going on this trip, and Christine and I have traveled a little bit in the past, but we go on like one trip, we go on one little vacation, and we go home. This is the first time I was also exposed to Christine's adrenaline junkie side. I didn't realize how adventurous she was to the point where it kicked my ass. Like, I think you had me climbing mountains for 9 hours a day in the middle of the heat. And I'm talking Myanmar at this time.
And you were smoking at the time, actually.
Yeah, smoking cigarettes. And I can't believe that was like past life. I don't know. Gross. And
we're not going to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. We also had been drinking a lot in New York City. And so I was definitely not in my best shape at all. And you were like, we're going to climb this
I hike. Chose like, I think we started the climb at 10 a.m. and I just said I wanted to climb this mountain. There's a temple or a pagoda at the top, and you could see the entire village. It looks stunning from whatever side.
Absolutely struggling, but you could see grandma's climbing faster than me while smoking two cigarettes in her mouth at the same time.
And had no shoes.
It was wild.
And she literally outbeat Kirsty. Like, Kirsty was literally out of breath, and she was walking up and just like, gave her the biggest side eye. She's like, oh.
Right. Yeah, it was really embarrassing. But we made it to the top. It was amazing. And then I think later on in this trip, we ended up in this really small village because you had told me you wanted to do a trek. I'm always down for the flow. I'm the type of person, I'm like, look, you tell me what you want to do, we'll do it. I'm not going to fuss with it, right? But you told me you wanted to do a trek. I don't know why I didn't think more about it, but I didn't realize it was actually a 3 day long trek and we were going to be walking 40 something miles, right?
I think it was 42 miles in 2.5 days.
And keep in mind too, it's 100 degree plus weather outside. It's in the middle of summer. And so we start this trek. It's day one in Kalaw, which is this small town in Myanmar.
That's
and
where you start this trek to Inle Lake, which Inle Lake is like the Venice for Southeast Asia, I would imagine. It's a floating city on water, or a floating village. Whoa, definitely not a city. Floating village on water. Again, completely untouched. And it looks stunning. Like, they had these fishermen who are kind of, like, on stilts. And it looked really gorgeous. Cool. Yeah.
But to get there, you have to walk for, like, 3 days.
Well, you could choose to either go there by jeepney. But, of course, I wanted to do the adventurous thing.
You which wanted is to walk there.
Yeah, I wanted to the walk there.
So we start with our backpacks, we start in Kalaw with this village. And in this village, it's such a small village. And there's not much there, right? But we had gotten so frustrated with asking people to take our photo. You know, you ask a stranger to take a photo and you know what happens.
Again, we weren't thinking about Instagram, but we were just trying to document our memories and the experiences we were having. So we kept passing our phone off to somebody to take a photo, and then they would like completely miss the background or like cut off half my ear or just like
miss the whole point,
miss the whole thing. And then we have to like patiently wait there for someone else because we can't ask that person again. I don't want to make them feel that they don't like their photo. So I'm always like, wow, I love it.
And wow, then you're a photographer or something. This is, you got the eye. And then we're like, that was the ugliest effing photo I've ever seen in my life. So we're so tired of dealing with this. So we eventually were like, we should look for a tripod or something to help. We can just take our own photos. And I don't know why I thought to check in this small village in Kalaw for a tripod, but I found this one little shop. On the side of a
dirt road. It looked like a bodega. And it honestly felt like a mirage. It was like the only standing shop in this whole village. And it was dusty and creaky. And
we walked in and I said, do you have a tripod? And little do you know, he goes underneath the counter. He opens up a glass door and he pulls out this tripod that's covered in dust. And he's like, he's like, here. And I think it was in $15 in U.S. dollars. And at this time, that was a lot of money in Southeast Asia. So I was
I mean, even in Myanmar, I think we were spending not a ton of money per day.
I think it was less than $20 a day per person. So to spend $15 on one tripod, I was like, oh, we're going over budget. But I was like, you know what? It's fine. It's fine because this is something we want to do. So we bought the tripod. And it even came with a Bluetooth remote, which was even better. And I remember we sat at this cafe right before we're starting the trek. And we sat the tripod up. And I was like, no one's looking. Let's just try to take a picture of ourselves real quick. And I think we're pretending to cheers our coffee or a beer or something. And we're cheersing. And we're like, cheese, click, click. And it was just like the cringiest thing ever, but that was our first time ever using the tripod. It was at this tiny village in Myanmar, and we took it on
everywhere with us because we also didn't want to bother people to take our photos. So we started making it feel like a scavenger hunt. We traveled, so every other place that we went to in Myanmar, we were like, cool, like this is a photo spot. Let's go and travel to it. Let's see if it's, you know, on top of a mountain or how long it takes us to get
or
there.
I would see that there would be a beautiful temple or a pagoda or anything. And I would say, Christine, why don't you go and throw your dress and see if we can take a really cool picture. And also keep in mind, this is with an iPhone, right? We're not, we don't have a camera. We're literally using a tripod with our iPhone. I think at the time it was like an iPhone 10 or something. So it wasn't the best quality. And but we were making it work, and eventually we're like, this is really fun, let's get creative with it, let's have fun, because it's just you and I on this trip for however long we're going to be here for. We might as well have a little scavenger hunt, as you said, with these photos. And we started editing and kind of getting more into it, and I was like, oh, if you pose this way, the lighting looks great on your dress. And we were just having fun and starting to watch YouTube videos and see how I can edit better.
It kind of became a goal for us, because this was like, while we were on this trip, again, we didn't have any responsibilities, which was, I can't even tell you when I'm gonna feel like that again, because I don't know, because now we have this platform. But I don't know what it's like to not have any single responsibility. Like, you don't have bills to pay, you don't have to think about work tomorrow, just solely what do you want to do. And like, I think that was the most freeing feeling that I've ever felt in my entire life, because it was like, cool, if I liked this village that we're staying in, we can stay in for 3 weeks if you want. Yeah. Or we can pick up a flight and buy a flight to Malaysia tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the trip did. It, essentially, we went from Myanmar, and then we went back to Thailand, and then we jumped over. I think we did Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos. And Laos was actually one of the first viral photos. Do you remember which photo it was?
I was definitely a gym rat when we were in New York. So I wanted to make sure that we were having some kind of physical movement or involvement.
Every time Christine wants to go to a new country, she looks up the most difficult adventure task that we can possibly do. And she makes me do it.
So this just happened to be a mountain again that I wanted to do. It was a hike and it looked easy. And there was a motorcycle sitting on top of the mountain. And I was like, that's it. That's the spot. We got to go get a photo there.
I don't even know how that motorbike got there in the first place. No, to be honest.
I actually think people thought we put that there.
People really thought we trekked up this mountain with a motorcycle. I was like, let them think that.
It's fine.
Little do you know, it's been there for years. So we are sitting. It actually is kind of scary, though. You're sitting on the edge of this mountain, at the top of a mountain, on top of a motorbike that's just ledged in between mm-hmm. some rocks.
And it's not like a flat mountain. It's all jagged, edged, yeah. and pointy.
For sure.
It literally has a peak at the top.
Yeah. And so I'm sitting there. I'm at the peak capacity of Bluetooth radius here, and we have the tripod sitting up, and I'm like sitting in front of this motorcycle acting also like mysterious and click 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 click, you know, we're just clicking away. And eventually we post that video or that picture and it goes viral. I think it got picked up on all these different Instagram channels and was used across articles and stuff. And I think that was like, oh, that's cool. It was really, I mean, that was awesome. I think that was a little excitement.
Yeah,
that
we and then we started expecting. To gain traction from that, and you know, people were like, where is this, how'd you get here, how'd you afford this?
Mm-hmm. And then I think the questions rolled in about being queer and traveling, right?
Also what it was like to travel as a gay couple or a lesbian couple. Like, can I bring my family here? Is it okay to hold my boyfriend's hand in public? Yeah. And that was huge for us because we were like, who are we? Like, why are we getting these questions?
Yeah, at first, I think at this point in time, we are traveling also to a certain degree, and for lack of better terms, innocence, in the sense that we weren't traveling with being an LGBTQ traveler at our forefront, right? We were just traveling because we truly enjoyed it and we loved to travel. Mm-hmm. We weren't traveling as a gay couple. We were just traveling to be backpackers, right? It was never at the forefront of my mind, at least at the beginning.
Yeah, it was almost naive kind of to think that, like, there isn't a ton of representation there.
I didn't even think about what it meant to have representation in travel. So we started receiving these DMs from people all over the world. I mean, Russia, Tunisia, literally Taiwan, like all over the world, people are asking us, hey, how can I travel as a queer person? I'm scared to do it. Even in the US, people are asking us. And at first we were like, well, why don't we look up some of answers for them? And we started looking up the answers for their questions, and we couldn't find anything. The only other things that we could find were maybe one or two other queer blogs that were out there of other creators, and there was only very few at the time. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, wow, it's actually difficult to find the answers to these questions, because we were just going to answer it for them. And we realized, well, why don't we make a platform that could be a safe space for people to come and ask these questions, and we can give direct answers to.
And be that resource, really, for people, because there wasn't any.
Yeah.
And so we were, of course, these are our lived experiences, but I think that was something that we found a passion in, because these are true experiences. It's not something that we could Google. It was, this is how we felt, and this is what we're showing, and we loved each other, and that was like something that we wanted to be what we didn't see when we were younger.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is normalizing what queer love looks like anyways. You know, I think already it was limited resources for LGBTQ, but especially the B and the T and the Q, right? There is a lot of gay resources, but for the L, sorry, let me start that over. But I think there, even at that time, there was a lot of resources, when I say a lot, a little bit more for gay men, but there really weren't a lot for queer women or for the B or the T community, you know? So we wanted to make sure that we were sharing those voices and sharing our perspective, because there really wasn't much other option for people to look forward to.
Do you remember what our first partnership was?
A partnership, yeah, loosely. So we, at this time, we had been traveling for a couple months, and we're now in the Philippines, and a hostel reached out to us. A hostel reached out to us, and it said, hey, do you want to come stay with us in the Philippines? I heard that you're here. We'll make sure we give you a private room in a hostel if you take some photos in the room and of the property. And I was like, what?
We were floored. We're like, wait, are we getting asked to stay somewhere for free?
Yeah.
And we're like, hell yeah. Like, we're going to do that.
Yeah, of course. I was like, babe, we made it. We're staying somewhere for free. And we walked into this hostel. They had a plaque on the front desk that said, welcome on airplane mode. And I was like, oh, my God.
I was like, how cute. They know our names and everything.
Yeah.
We got collab dinners. I think we even gave them drone content. Like, yeah, we were going in.
Yeah, because at this time we had only just changed the platform name, and I think you came up with on airplane mode, which you're punny, so I think it worked out and you just came up with that. But we had nothing other than that one viral photo and then a couple other pictures before that, right? And so it said, welcome on airplane mode. We take a couple photos, and I was like, babe, what if we could do this long term? Then we could live here forever. We don't have to spend our money to travel. Then we can travel for as long as we want. And you were always, and this is something I love about you, is you were always one step ahead, in the sense of you're like, not just travel for free. Why don't we monetize this? Why don't we start a business where we can?
Because I was like, there weren't enough resources, right? So let's be that resource. There needs to be representation. And my background is marketing. So I was like, why don't I take all of those skills that I use across all of these brands that I used to market for and build all of these social strategies for
Christine
and apply that,
like,
to us?
Christine was like, we need a media kit. We need a pitch deck. We need all these things.
I was like,
and
pitch,
like,
emails. We need the PR contact. We need everything.
She had an entire brand strategy within 5 minutes. And I was over here like, yay, free hostel room. She goes, no, we're going to get paid to do this. I was like, okay, sure. And so at what started as a scavenger hunt and us just taking photos, it became, now what can we do to prolong our trip?
Because we didn't want to go home.
No, we didn't.
We weren't even close to our budget, like reaching our end budget goal. So we were like, okay, if we can travel, get paid doing it, and travel for free, like, we hit the jackpot. Yeah. Like, this is literally, we cracked the secret. We cracked the code.
Absolutely. And I think the true passion of it came from, we started receiving more and more and more DMs and questions, you know, from our community, which was, I think, and still to this day, is the most humbling thing in the world, right? It's truly where our passion comes from, because without our community, then there's really no point. And I think we always talk about this, and I always say that if in 80 years time we look back on this, on these years, and we did nothing with the platform and helping this world be a better place, then what was the point? And I think that was always our mindset, like, how can we use this platform for
how can we help people?
Absolutely. So now, you know, our pictures are starting to get bigger and bigger. Christine has now used her background in marketing. I actually went to art school in San Francisco years and years before Christine. I didn't finish, but that's a separate story. I went to San Francisco, did art school, didn't finish, but I always had a love for art.
Kirstie's being very humble right now because she is an artist. Like, I'm going to add some pictures in here. Yeah, we are. We're going to add some pictures because you don't understand. Like, this girl can draw and she can edit. And when she has a vision, it is amazing and it's incredible.
I always get shy with this.
I don't know why you get shy, because it's, like, amazing. Like, people can't draw like you do. People can't come up with a vision like you do. And so, I mean, I want to say, like, everything, all of our skills combined together is what brought us here.
Yeah, and I think that's also important because it allows both of us to bring our own individual expertise to the brand itself. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the reasons why we've been able to stick with it.
And also, you're a sponge. So when you found out, like, oh, I could take these photos and some of the photos are going viral, like, why don't we continue to learn about this? Like, we don't, again, we don't have much of an itinerary besides the countries we want to hit and, like, specific things that we wanted to do.
Yeah.
I think at that time, Bali was our goal. We're like, let's save Bali for last. But I think during that time, we also found that we were falling in love with places we've never heard of, villages mm-hmm. we've never heard of, countries we didn't have originally on our list, and then we just suddenly added to our list. Yeah. And so, like, YouTubing all of these ways to edit these photos for sure. and come up with this amazing itinerary that we did.
Well, also, too, I think we were starting to educate ourselves on what it means to be an LGBTQ traveler, right? We started to open up those doors and read more about the history of things in different countries and learn more about the culture and the acceptance level. I think to us that was something that was very, very eye-opening, because it started to realize the disadvantages for a lot of other communities, especially being queer and being open. So it made us realize the impact that we could have possibly, not only on our community from the States, but also how can we help other people eventually become more equal when it comes to expressing their love and things like that. And I'm not saying go to different countries and just flaunt, because that's also a disrespectful, it could be disrespectful, but how can we eventually find LGBTQ businesses to go to and travel and experience and find people in different communities to connect with. I think that was a huge part of it. And it became such a huge part of the brand itself. Mm. And actually, how did you come up with On Airplane Mode to begin with, the name itself?
So the name, honestly, I was just trying to be funny at the time. I was trying to be funny, and I just... that was something that we were always doing. Like, we were always trying to catch a flight. And I feel like that kind of was a staple to who we are and what we were doing. Like, yeah. I feel like anytime a friend would ask us to hang out, we're like, oh, well, we're taking a trip to Arizona or somewhere else, yeah. you know? So, and I feel like, honestly, still to this day, that's very true.
Yeah, true, true. I mean, whenever we started On Airplane Mode, is there anything that you remember being particularly cringy or challenging to begin with, that where you were just
taking the photos, for sure,
taking the photos
in public? I think this is also when we realized sunrise and sunset is the golden hour. It's also gonna be the time, like, you need to just compromise those times as a content creator, as a travel content creator, because that's the time when you're gonna not find flocks of people going there. Yeah. It's the best lighting, you're not being cringe in front of these people, but you can't always win those times. So there were definitely times where we're like, okay, let's go pose here in front of all of these people.
Yeah, it's the most. And I think also there's a beginning stage of getting into content creation.
Oh yeah, we had like 3 followers, right?
Yeah, like literally
like a little
the
more
only
than that,
people
but...
watching, the only people watching are your friends and family.
Right.
And you're just like, hey guys, I'm traveling here today. And you're like pretending you have this huge audience, but it's really your sisters or your cousins or something, and then your best friend from 25 years ago. So that part was especially cringy, because we were just,
you don't have the audience yet.
We were living in this world of delusion that we're doing this, and I knew that if we were to just push through that cringy feeling, that maybe we could eventually travel longer. And we were like, whatever it takes. If that's what it takes, I'm gonna do it.
If you're gonna take anything out of this and you're trying to be a content creator, is it's okay to be cringe, and be cringe, because only the cringiest people make it.
Yeah, no, honestly, I think that there's a TikTok out there that says that specifically. Yeah. And talking about On Airplane, we've been doing this 4.5 years now, right? Wow, mm-hmm. It's crazy. 4.5 years. And do you have anything that you specifically want to do going into the next years, and something that you want to work on next?
Yeah, I think a huge place that we want to play in, I think we've evolved, right? So we started off with LGBTQ travel, and then we also realized that there also isn't representation anywhere in media. Yeah. Like, when we were growing up, there wasn't a ton, and even then I feel like there's still pockets of us, or like some visible lesbian representation, like on some TV shows, but it's not really everywhere, and it's not normalized.
Yeah,
like usually it's some traumatic love story of like someone cheating, or a straight person falling in love with a woman, and then also then leaving them and breaking their heart.
Never like, something normal. It's never just two people in love, which I'm like, still to this day.
So I feel like that's somewhere we would love to go, is I want to go into entertainment or into TV and just show normalized queer love. I think Schitt's Creek did a great job at it.
Absolutely. I mean, I wish that there were more shows like that come out. Mm-hmm. I think Yeah, I think going into the entertainment space, going to television, maybe hosting our own show would be great one day.
Also teaching.
Teaching is huge. I think in 2023, we opened up the doors for doing a lot of teaching. And I think it kind of brought back this new passion where we know that the reason we have this platform and love this platform is because we love helping people. And I think that that really was brought out in us again when we started teaching and doing master classes and workshops. Yeah. Which is really cool.
Yeah, I think that's something that we've definitely learned to love is having more of those speaking opportunities, because we were able to talk to large amounts of people about the importance of LGBTQ travel, about the how you build a social platform. And that's something I feel like is really important to us. It's obviously something that we preach every single day, so it's not hard, but...
Yeah,
it's something we want to expand.
And honestly, the expansion also came from this podcast too. Like, how do we continue building and growing and playing with new forms of media and seeing what we could do to just continue the conversation and keep pushing that needle and seeing how we can keep getting more representation for queer women especially.
So at the end of every episode, we're going to be taking in your questions that you submitted. So here's the first one.
Okay, let's go for it.
How do you avoid burnout?
I think putting your passion first and learning time management is huge, because burnout can happen to anyone, no matter how passionate you are. And sometimes, honestly, the more passionate you are, the easier it can be to burn out. But I think for both of us, time management is huge. And making sure that you leave time for yourself to take a step away. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's so easy to get tunnel vision and then, you know, especially being a content creator, it really never stops. So I just think that, you know, managing your time wisely, dedicating that time to whatever you're doing, but also then putting it away and just taking in the moments, spending time with friends, putting the phone down, like not everything needs to be filmed.
Which is something that we obviously always have.
It's even hard. It's even hard for us, but because we just want to show everything.
So if you have any answer, let us know. No, just kidding. What would you consider to be an LGBTQ destination?
Okay, that's hard. Amsterdam is one of them. I think also Amsterdam is great for solo travelers because there is a huge community there. It's really easy to navigate. Like, you can walk almost anywhere, if not ride a bike. And I feel like you're not really pressured to see a ton there. Like, it's kind of the things that you stumble on is what Amsterdam is about. Like, after the canals, like, it's all about just walking and getting lost in that city. And there's just so much queer energy everywhere.
It was also the first place to ever legalize gay marriage, which was not that long ago, but that's still a step towards, like, starting it for the whole world kind of thing, you know?
Okay. How do you deal with hateful comments?
I think this is something that most people deal with. Whether you're a content creator or not, you can be at risk for hateful comments. People love to share misery sometimes. And I think, obviously, we do still get hateful comments all the time. We do. But I think there, and it does hurt, but I think there's a certain point where you just have to tell yourself, again, living in that DeLulu world, that these hateful comments are only pushing you in the algorithm. So hopefully more and more people are going to see your work. So it's like, thanks, man. I really appreciate your kind words, you know, even though it was the worst thing that anyone could have said to me. But I think just not letting it get to you is...
Yeah, and having a good judge of character. Like, if you can, like, kind of read through the lines, is this something that's super hateful that hurt you? Block that person.
Yeah. Also, sometimes we let our other community fight it. You know what I mean? There are some people who get on there and let them be the keyboard warriors for you, in the sense where they stand up and it starts conversation in the comments. Because I think the last thing you want to do is get so invested in that comment where you kind of lose yourself a little bit. And then next thing you know, you've thought about it much longer than it needed to. And now that comment is absorbing so much energy from you that you can't even focus on.
And
the
that's when
you
need to know, like, you need to put a stop to this. Like, don't waste your time on people who are hiding behind the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please remember to like and subscribe.
And don't forget to tune in next week. We will be having a different type of episode. It's going to be fun, so you don't want to miss it.